Welcome to Test All Things. Test All Things is an outreach of Tower to Truth Ministries, and I'm your host, Fran Sankey. You can find us on the web at towertotruth.net. Test All Things is a Bible discernment evangelistic program dedicated to creating an awareness of and biblical answers to false religious teachings opposing Christianity today. Today, I'm interviewing former Jehovah's Witness Tom McGovern. Tom has written a paper called Stuff You Shouldn't Do If You're a Jehovah's Witness. And believe it or not, the subject matter is even deeper than the title. Hey, if you've ever thought it would be much easier to live as a Christian if your New Testament came with a convenient list of do's and don'ts, you might want to check out this program. And if you ever wanted to check out becoming a Jehovah's Witness, well, you'll probably be happy after this show that you didn't. So we're going to have a little fun maybe today and learn a lot at the same time. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks, Fran. It's great to be back on the program.
Okay. Tom, you were a Jehovah's Witness for how long and how long since you've gotten out?
I was Jehovah's Witnesses for about 30 years. Went in as a teenager. And it's been about 10 years now since the Lord brought me out of it. I had been fading for quite a long time before that, so depending on what you consider to be out, but I've been completely away from the organization for 10 years.
Okay. Now, on this show, Test All Things, I usually focus on the theological aspects of a cult, doctrinal things. Are there any sociological issues associated with religious cults?
Setting the idea of theology aside and in the specific doctrines and so forth, the big problem with this type of group, cult group or, new religious movement, whatever term you want to use for it, is that they pretty much all engage some form of mind control over their adherents. Now, that's a big topic, and we couldn't even begin to discuss it sufficiently in the amount of time that we have, but the bottom line is that groups like this create a very rigid structure in which their members have to live and function. There's a lot of ways to do this, and if anyone wants to know some good websites on the topic, they can contact me through my website, which I'm sure you'll be giving in a few minutes, and I'd be happy to provide some links and whatever information I can. But one of the big ways cults control their members is by requiring obedience to lots of rules, endless rules. They have rules for every aspect of life, even insignificant matters that we would tend to think that people should be able to decide on their own. And that's part of the problem with Jehovah's Witnesses. Some of the positions that they take can be seen as legitimate matters of conscience among Christians. Some Christians might feel the same way as Jehovah's Witnesses do on some of these issues, but the problem is that the witnesses aren't allowed to use their conscience like mature Christians. Rather, the organization dictates what their conscience has to be.
So you would feel as though the Jehovah's Witness religion fits this description of a sociological cult?
Yeah, I would agree, absolutely. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, some of the many rules that Jehovah's Witnesses are expected to follow. That's what that sheet that you were talking about, Stuff You Shouldn't Do If You're a Jehovah's Witness, is all about. It lists a lot of those things. We can only really scratch the surface. If someone would like a copy of that list, go to my website at dispelthedarkness.org. That's DISPELTHEARKNESS, dispelthedarkness.org. Go to the resources and links page, and you can download the stuff you shouldn't do if you're a Jehovah's Witness.
All right, as we go through some of these shouldn'ts on your list, and by the way, this is a full page front and back of things that you, or should I say stuff you shouldn't do if you're a Jehovah's Witness. There's lots and lots of rules on here. Why does the Watchtower enforce so many laws on its members?
Well, I think it's what we already talked about. It's a control mechanism. It gives organization power over the individual member, and specifically the leadership. It gives them power. Some of the things, not all, but some of the things, and quite a few of them that we'll discuss, are offenses for which a Jehovah's Witness can actually be disfellowshipped from the organization. And what that means is they are completely shunned by any family members, friends, who are Jehovah's Witnesses. Doesn't matter if it's their parents, brother, sister, or son, daughter. They're to be completely ignored, completely shunned. And that's about as heavy-handed a control mechanism as you can imagine. Having stringent rules like that tends to keep people in line and makes them very afraid of disobeying the organization.
Okay, let's look at this list. I have celebrate Mother's Day. You shouldn't celebrate Father's Day. You shouldn't celebrate Grandparents' Day. How about most people know that Jehovah's Witnesses do not celebrate birthdays. Why not, and are there any good scriptures that they use to justify this?
Well, they don't really make any sort of a biblical argument as such about birthdays, but they do refer to in the Bible or a couple of instances in the Bible where birthdays are mentioned and where bad things happened. In Genesis chapter 40, it was Pharaoh's birthday, and as it turned out, this was the situation where Joseph had the dreams about the cupbearer and the baker, and one was going to be released and the other one was going to be hung, and that was the baker who was put to death on that occasion. Also in Matthew 14, it talks about Herod's birthday, and that, of course, is the occasion where John the Baptist was headed. And after they cite those two scriptures, they say everything in the Bible is there for a reason. Jehovah's Witnesses take note that God's Word reports unfavorably about birthday celebrations, and so shun these. Once again, it's not a question of them suggesting it so that members can make a conscious decision. They're simply forbidden. And they're saying that because twice in the Bible people were executed or killed at birthday parties or birthday celebrations, that means they're taking that as the Bible telling us in a roundabout way that birthdays themselves are displeasing to God. Well, you know, I can only think of one incident in the Bible that involved a haircut, and that was the incident of Samson, and that didn't turn out so well either, but I wouldn't take that to mean that Christians have to avoid haircuts. Besides that, there are actually other instances of birthday celebration in the Bible that are not shown in an unfavorable light. For example, the most obvious one is the birth of Jesus, which was clearly celebrated by both angels and humans at the time. Also, if we look a little more closely, it appears that Job's children actually celebrated their birthdays. In the Jehovah's Witnesses' own New World Translation of the Bible at Job 1:4, it says, "And his sons went and held a banquet at the house of each one on his own day." Now, it doesn't say his birthday, and the Jehovah's Witness would quickly point out that his day doesn't have to mean his birthday. But later on in the book, in Job chapter 3, the first three verses, it says, "It was after this that Job opened his mouth and began to call down evil upon his day." Same expression. "Job now answered and said, 'Let the day perish on which I came to be born.'" So it seems that there is a possibility that what Job's sons held was a birthday celebration. And since there's no explicit command regarding birthday celebrations in the Bible, how can you make specific rules about it? It doesn't stop Jehovah's Witnesses from making those rules.
If you just join me, I am speaking with Tom McGovern, former Jehovah's Witness Tom McGovern. You can contact him via his website at dispelthedarkness.org. A few more shouldn'ts on this list. You shouldn't celebrate New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. You shouldn't celebrate Christmas. Now, I understand that the Jehovah's Witnesses used to celebrate Christmas and now they don't. Is that so?
Yeah, in fact, back in 1904, the Watchtower actually advocated the celebration of Christmas. They acknowledged that Christmas is not the real anniversary of our Lord's birth, and they considered it to be the Annunciation Day of his human begetting, the day that Gabriel came to Mary, in other words, to tell her that she would have a child. I guess that's disputable, too, but their conclusion was that since it's not a matter of divine appointment or injunction, but merely a tribute of respect to Jesus, it really wasn't important as for what specific day it was celebrated on, but we might as well just join the civilized world and celebrate it on the same day. Now, that would be something you'd be amazed to read in the Watchtower nowadays. Jehovah's Witnesses today would reject that explanation completely. Somewhere along the line, the organization brought forth new light about the celebration of Christmas. They pointed out that there are certain customs associated with Christmas that have a pagan origin, and they've forbidden it for their members. Again, there may be Christians, actually, you know, real Christians out there that feel that way about Christmas and choose not to celebrate it, but a Jehovah's Witness doesn't have the ability to make that kind of a conscience decision. He risks being disfellowshipped if he celebrates it.
Quite a difference there, huh?
Quite a bit.
Yeah. Now, I look at this list, I cannot think of anything wrong with observing Mother's Day or Thanksgiving. What's the problem here?
Well, they actually they try to relate Mother's Day to paganism as well. There was a brochure that they put out some years back called School and Jehovah's Witnesses, where they point out that they say that mother worship, ancient Greece, ceremonies to Cybele or Rhea, the great mother of the gods, were performed on the Ides of March throughout Asia Minor, and they try to relate that to modern celebrations of Mother's Day. And they feel the same way about national holidays. That holidays may be celebrated only in specific nations, things like Thanksgiving or Fourth of July that we'd celebrate here in the United States. And they say in some places there may be a Memorial Day set aside and so forth, other holidays of that type. And they just say we respectfully refrain from participating in all of these holidays. Of course, they believe in complete political neutrality. They don't take sides with the nation anyway. They don't proclaim loyalty or allegiance to a particular nation. So naturally, celebrating the national holidays would go along with that. Now, personally, I believe that the reason that the Jehovah's Witness leadership is so opposed to celebrating holidays and birthdays is because it tends to alienate Jehovah's Witnesses from their non-Jehovah's Witness families. After all, I mean, when do we spend time with our families? You know, most of our lives we're busy, we're working, we're doing what we need to do. But on special occasions, like holidays and birthdays, we take the time out and we get together with our loved ones. When we start to be absent on those occasions, it kind of drives a wedge between the Jehovah's Witness and the quote-unquote worldly relatives. And I think that's what the organization wants. They want the individual Jehovah's Witness to be wrapped up in few ties to the outside as possible, and that way, again, the organization has a much greater degree of power and control instead of being cut off from the group. And that means cut off from the only support system that you have if you've alienated yourself from your family who's not in the organization.
Okay, on your little list of things you shouldn't do if you're a Jehovah's Witness, joining the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts, even buying a Girl Scout cookie is a no-no. How come?
Well, they regard the Scouts and similar organizations, I guess they have the Girl Guards and the Boy Guards and like that in other countries, they consider them to be military organizations. Sure, and since they believe in complete neutrality in all political and military matters, they're not permitted to allow their children to join such organizations. There was a brief article in the magazine The Golden Age, which is now the Wake magazine, but back then it was The Golden Age, back in 1935, that identified the Boy Scouts specifically as a military group. Oddly enough, that's the last time they actually presented that argument in the Watchtower publications officially, but the rule is still firmly enforced. And as far as something simple like buying Girl Scout cookies, well, they would see that as giving support to an organization whose goals are opposed to those of God's kingdom, which any military organization would be in their eyes. So they wouldn't want to buy the cookies because that would be helping to support these organizations opposed to God. Now, another organization they refused to join for a completely different reason, YMCA. And the reason for that is that YMCA stands for Young Men's Christian Association, and the Y was actually a Christian organization at one time, but now it's just a secular social/health club. Nonetheless, the Jehovah's Witnesses go back to that original meaning of the name, and they associated with false religion, and so they're not able to join, even if just the gym or the swimming pool.
Okay, we are speaking with Tom McGovern. Tom is at dispelthedarkness.org, dispelthedarkness.org. We are speaking about a paper he wrote called Stuff You Shouldn't Do If You're a Jehovah's Witness, and we're going to pick up with the topic of dating. The next one, it says that Jehovah's Witnesses shouldn't date without supervision, and really, young or old, age makes no difference. Is that true?
Yeah, this is really a big area to talk about. Jehovah's Witnesses have some very unusual ideas about relationships between men and women, and it's really a great illustration, if you start to look into it and really understand what they teach, about the extent of control that they exert over their people. I should also point out that there's really not any biblical basis for most of what they teach in this area. Now, there is a command in the Bible, clearly, to refrain from sexual immorality. But what they do is they make all these little rules ostensibly to prevent people from getting into a situation where they might be tempted to immorality. And, in fact, they assume that people have no maturity or restraint whatsoever in the presence of the opposite sex. Jehovah's Witnesses teach that dating, you know, what we think of as, you know, a man and a woman go out on a date together, that's only something that should be engaged in if one is serious about marriage to the person that they're dating. Since teenagers are not generally considered old enough to get married, they strongly discourage dating by teenagers, except perhaps in the very late teens when somebody might be thinking about getting married. If a person is serious about finding a husband or a wife, they're still not supposed to just date various people indiscriminately in hopes of finding the right person, but rather they should be serious about the person that they're dating before they start going out with them. Now, that kind of raises the question of how are they supposed to get to know the person that well unless they've actually spent some time with them, and the witness's answer to that would be, well, they could go out in groups or they could get to know each other in the Kingdom Hall or by going out in the field service, which is door-to-door work together. And even when couples are old enough to date with serious intent, they're really expected not to be alone together on dates. One of the Awake magazines from 1981 said, even when the couple is old enough to court, help them by arranging a chaperone. An engaged Christian couple who were married let their guard down and engaged in uncleanness. Now, see, that's what I was talking about before. They just assume that, people have no control, no restraint. Looking back, the young man admitted, most of the time we had a chaperone, but those few times we didn't hurt us. So what are they implying? They're implying you should never go out on a date unless you have somebody with you, a chaperone, to make sure you don't get into trouble. Like many of the things that are on that things you shouldn't do list, this one is not necessarily spelled out in Jehovah's Witness publication details, but it's certainly understood within the congregations. Elders will definitely get involved with a couple if they feel that the unwritten rules are being violated. And they get very picky about it. They don't want you sitting a boy and a girl or a man and a woman sitting together at the Kingdom Hall unless they're serious about each other during the meetings, even to that extent. One other rule in this regard illustrates just how little they trust the morals of their own people. There's a new recently released elders manual called Shepherd the Flock of God that just came out within the past couple of months. And this is what it says about people staying in a house overnight. It says, evidence testified to by at least two witnesses that the accused stayed all night in the same house with a person of the opposite sex or in the same house with a known homosexual under improper circumstances can be grounds for disfellowshipping. This may be true even if both parties insist that nothing improper happened. So if you just happen to spend the same one night under the same roof with a person of the opposite sex, even though nothing happens, you could still be presumed to be guilty of sexual immorality and be disfellowshipped for it. I think that says a lot about their view of relationships between the sexes.
They're really controlling that also, like everything else.
Very much so.
Yeah. Now, if these shouldn'ts won't in and of themselves get a Jehovah's Witness disfellowship, what would?
Well, when people ask me what somebody can be disfellowshipped for, and oddly enough, I get asked that question quite a bit, I'll usually respond anything the three elders agree they should be disfellowshipped for, because that's the procedure. They have accused of something. You have a meeting with three elders in private, and they make the decision. There's a specific list of offenses in that elder's manual that I just mentioned that can result in being disfellowshipped. In theory, it's only somebody who engages in these offenses unrepentantly that needs to be disfellowshipped, but a lot of times the elders don't often recognize the concept of struggling with sin. If you have a sin issue in your life and you're trying to overcome it, well, you may fall more than once before you get past it. But in many cases with Jehovah's Witnesses, if the person commits the sin on more than one occasion, they take that as evidence that the person is unrepentant, and they go ahead and disfellowship them. In addition, there are some non-specific charges that can be used to disfellowship, and the elders have a great deal of latitude in deciding what kind of conduct falls into these categories. They use nebulous terms like uncleanness, loose conduct, brazen conduct, and these things are really attitude-based offenses, and they can be made to fit almost any offense if the elders don't like your attitude.
If you just join me, I'm interviewing Tom McGovern, former Jehovah's Witness Tom McGovern, and I'm going to skip down a little bit on this list. And, you know, there's so many shouldn'ts here, stuff you shouldn't do as a Jehovah's Witness. It's just so exhaustive. How do Jehovah's Witnesses have any fun? That's something I think of.
Well, they don't have a whole lot of fun if they live really fully according to the lifestyle the way that they're supposed to. It really puts a constant situation of conflict between doing all that you can for the organization, and there's constant pressure to do more, and between that and having some actual time in your life to enjoy life. I mean, in practice, most Jehovah's Witnesses tend to bend the rules here and there. They try not to do anything that's actually going to get them disfellowshipped. But at the same time, they kind of walk as close to the edge as they can, simply because it's next possible to follow all these rules. And when they bend the rules like that, they feel guilty because then they feel that they should be more obedient. Even innocent things that are not at all objectionable, like taking your family for a picnic on a Sunday afternoon, can be questionable and can be guilt-inducing because, after all, you could have used that time in the door-to-door work. So when you took your family on a picnic, and you could have been out in field service, why, are you really doing all that you can in serving God?
You know, it just tells me that being a good Jehovah's Witness must be very stressful. And I think of children in school. How do they get by?
Yeah. It's really tough for school children, as you can imagine. And even in the past, I mean, there was children being beaten and mobbed and so forth because of the stands that Jehovah's Witnesses took in earlier days. But school can be difficult enough without having anything special causing you problems. Having to be different in so many ways, Jehovah's Witness kids do, can really make somebody a target to be picked on by the other kids. Of course, the witnesses see that as persecution, which just convinces them that they're doing the right thing. They used to publish a booklet called School and Jehovah's Witnesses, and if you had a copy of that, it reads almost like a Talmud with all the things that Jehovah's Witnesses kids are prohibited from doing. In fact, a lot of the items on this list came out of that booklet. The booklet was so controversial, and it exposed their legalism so thoroughly that they actually took it out of circulation, placed it with another booklet called Jehovah's Witnesses Education that is much less specific, and that's the one they circulate now. Now, that doesn't mean that the rules have gone away. They're not being quite as upfront about offering all that information in one place, one publication.
Gotcha. Tom, skipping down on the list a little more on this stuff you shouldn't do, you shouldn't say good luck. Seems kind of harmless. I mean, whether you believe in luck or not, why? What mindset goes into this shouldn't?
Well, they refuse to use the term luck because of what their Bible, the New World Translation, says at Isaiah 65, verse 11. And the way it reads there is, "But you men are those leaving Jehovah, those forgetting my holy mountain, those setting in order a table for the God of good luck, and those filling up mixed wine for the God of destiny." So they conclude from that that wishing someone good luck or saying that something that happened was lucky is a form of idolatry toward the God of good luck. They completely ignore the context, of course, which is talking about an actual apostasy among the Israelites worshiping false gods who were called good luck and destiny. Now, I'd agree that Christians should look to the providence of God for their needs, not look to good luck to get what they need in life, but it does seem a bit extreme to prohibit even the expression of wishing someone good luck on a new endeavor, or if you're taking a test or going for your driver's exam or something like that. The text in Isaiah is surely not talking about innocent expressions like that. And besides that, they're inconsistent in the matter, because most Jehovah's Witnesses have no problem saying that a given event was fortunate as if that meant something different than lucky. Even the Watchtower uses the word fortunate fairly often. If you check it in the Watchtower library, you can search it and you find lots of references. But in fact, most other Bible translations use the word fortune in Isaiah 65:11 rather than luck. If you check a dictionary, words are synonymous. They mean the same thing. So it's just a bit of legalism not using that specific expression based completely on their own translation of the Bible.
If you just join me, I am interviewing Tom McGovern at dispelthedarkness.org, dispelthedarkness.org. Tom, the number one sign that you're a cult, no doubt about it, is that Jehovah's Witnesses shouldn't own a Smurf. What is that all about?
Well, I don't know if that one's quite as true anymore, but back in the 80s and early 90s, that was a big one. It was a real tempest in a teapot for Jehovah's Witnesses back then. And you probably remember that was the time when the Smurfs were big on TV and they were very popular. And rumors were running rampant in the Jehovah's Witness organization about the supposed demonic connections of the Smurfs. Allegedly, there were satanic messages contained in the cartoon show, and even worse, Smurf toys were rumored to come alive and do unusual things, even biting and injuring the children in some cases. Now, I'll point out, these were not specifically mentioned in any of the publications, but boy, if you were in the organization at that time, you surely remember this. One story that went around concerned a rather messy child whose parents put Smurf wallpaper in his room. The parents began to notice that the room was suddenly tidy all the time, and upon observation, they found that the Smurfs were coming right down off the wallpaper at night and cleaning the room. But the classic story about Smurfs that went around with Jehovah's Witnesses has to be one about the little girl who had a Smurf doll at a Jehovah's Witness assembly hall, and right in the middle of the meeting, the Smurf got up, made a nasty remark, and walked out of the hall under its own power, because that demon didn't want to be there in the assembly of Jehovah's people. Well, these stories seem funny to us. I imagine you're probably laughing as you're hearing it, but they serve to illustrate the sort of fear that the average Jehovah's Witness lives under when it comes to the demonic and what a large part the occult plays in their lives, and it also illustrates the level of legalism that they're looking into every little detail of life to try to exert some kind of control.
Yes, they are, and I'm going to just close this out because we're almost out of time. It just seems that they are doing what the New Testament warns against, trying to become righteous by keeping external laws, and we just know through the Bible that we cannot do that. It's by faith in Jesus Christ. So when a Jehovah's Witness comes to your door, you know, if nothing else, just to share your testimony, the forgiveness of sins that you've experienced, and the assurance of salvation that you possess, not because of things that you do, but what Jesus has done for you on the cross. And that's what it's all about. Hey, if you want to hear this two-part interview with Tom McGovern again, you can contact me by email or phone at help@tower2truth.net or 610-513-5525. Or you can check out my website at tower2truth.net. And don't miss us again next week for another apologetic issue facing Christianity today. And remember, don't just believe everything you hear, but test all things.